This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. Welcome back to another episode of the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast. My name is Walt, his name is Chase, and we've got one simple goal every time you tune into the podcast, and that's to bring the outdoors to you when you can't be in the outdoors, which I am certain for almost anybody listening to this is far more than they'd like to admit. We spend a lot of time inside, staring at computer screens, working on the job site, and hopefully this gets you through your day. So thanks for tuning in, thanks for joining us, and I think we've got a fun episode for you guys. This one probably will be a little bit shorter than some of our episodes, but we are kicking off the Lessons from the Fall podcast series. Now, what this is meant to do is distill information from people who you've had on the podcast, who we've had on the podcast, and bring it to you in a format that shows progression, right? Everybody learns something in the woods every year, and we got some really stone cold killers that have come on the podcast, and guys who have, you know, ventured into new pursuits, and they've learned things, and we're going to bring those little tidbit lessons to you, and that's what we're setting out to do today. But first and foremost, dude, Chase, I don't get to talk to you as much as I once did, so what's good in your world?
Man, not really a whole lot. I'm still doing the same old right now, and we'll be on that pattern for the next couple of months, and then after that I'll be a free man for the most part. But yeah, just continuing the school grind and looking forward to graduating at the end of April, early May, working and just doing my everyday dad duties as well. So
that's right. Those don't stop, do they?
No. Those definitely never stop. So I even hear they never really stop even after the kids are gone.
So, oh boy.
But yeah, but it's fun, man. I'm starting to look forward to turkey season though, because we got turkey season really right around the corner. Especially if you're hunting in South Florida, it's getting real close. But even for us, I need to start getting the turkey gun out and getting dialed in and prepared. I'm probably going to buy a new pack for this season. Vest.
Okay. Yeah.
Buy a new vest for this season to kind of mess around with. So I'm looking forward to that. And I've kind of done some schoolwork stuff to make sure I can get out and go turkey hunting, and looking forward to going to Central Florida area to hunt some birds with you.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about it. We got an Osceola hunt planned out. I always have my turkey calls. In fact, I've got them right here. I've got the Woodhaven Ninja Ghost. I've got two of them, a brand new one for this season and the one that I've broken in. I've always got those on me, but I officially broke out the turkey vest from the closet, and my wife just went, because 'tis the season for yalts and kiki runs and all kinds of noises that, you know, in this small house drive her nuts. And then the dogs bark. But as always, she tolerates it. But yeah, man, we're gonna get after it down there, and I'm hoping we can film it while we are down there, because that would be a freaking blast, man. Document that adventure down there. We've got some local intel that's been shared with us. You know, shout out to those who will remain anonymous. Yeah, I'm getting really excited about it. 44 days, 43 days. Yeah, as we record this, 43 days and turkey season kicks off for me. So I am about to start spending my mornings before I clock in listening for birds in the National Forest and dropping pins and getting ready, man.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm looking forward to getting out there preseason. I remember last year I didn't do as much like preseason stuff as I would have liked to. So this year I'm going to really harp on that and try to get out there and maybe utilize some trail cameras some more for this turkey season.
Yeah, that's something you and I have kind of talked about is utilizing trail cameras for turkey, which is something I don't really like put hand in hand naturally. So I've got some areas around here where the birds move around a lot, and it's kind of interesting seeing where they move. And so I'm going to put up a couple trail cameras during turkey season, probably going to inventory some deer because the rut's just winding down over here as well. But if I put them out now, I'll get some deer inventory, and then I'll probably get some turkey inventory as well. And I think that's going to be a diabolical combination.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anytime you can utilize your trail cameras for more than just deer, to me, is awesome. So I like using them for turkey. Just in, it kind of goes back to kind of a historical thing, too. Like, okay, last year there were birds strutting in this area. Maybe they'll be again here this year or the year after that. So
that's right. Yeah, no. And, you know, speaking of turkey season, this quarterly giveaway is all turkey. We're going full turkey. So if you enjoy this podcast and you enjoy what we're doing, Chase and I are always going to be doing this podcast regardless. But if you want to support the show and help us do more, travel more, do bigger giveaways, go and do and record videos and live podcasts with people, consider going to Patreon. I mean, it's less than a cup of coffee a day. I think when I break it down, it's like 30 cents a day or something like that for our lowest tier. But Patreon, those funds go towards the production of more of this show. And one of the ways that we say thank you is quarterly giveaways. And so if you enter now, and if you're an existing Patreon member, you're entered in all future giveaways. But if you enter now, on March 30th or 31st, whatever that month ends with, we're going to be giving away an Alps Grand Slam turkey vest in Bottomland and a custom Chasing Tails pot call from Longbeard Life. And I am really excited. I love that vest. You love their calls. It just seems like a perfect marriage.
Yeah. I think it'd be a great giveaway, and it's the appropriate time of year to get that out to somebody so they can utilize it this season. And we may even throw in some mouth calls.
Oh, there you
with
go.
That giveaway.
How about that?
We're going to add some mouth calls. So I know some people prefer to use mouth calls. Some people like to use a pot call, and they all have their applications. So might as well have a little bit of both.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I honestly, I'm a mouth call guy. I really prefer to communicate, especially because I run the camera, right? I imagine like with kids, it would probably have a similar advantage as well. But anytime I need to minimize movement, being able to keep the call in my mouth and manipulate the bird, I saw that benefit right off the bat. But there are times where that bird just won't respond to anything. He might be coming. I found this last year where you hit that glass call or that slate call and suddenly he fires off even closer and you know he's coming. So it's always good to have tools.
Yeah. I like utilizing it for when I'm just out walking around, maybe trying to strike a bird up or something. Or maybe just reach out and touch one that's a little bit further out, and just to have the mouth call out of my mouth for a little while.
Yeah. So if you're interested, the link's in the show notes below. It's chasingtails.com. Actually, it's patreon.com/chasingtailsoutdoors. We'd love to have you over there. There's free hats. We've got a Marco Polo group. It's just one way to support the show if that's something you're interested in. But, dude, let's get down to today's topic, and that is lessons from the fall. I kind of teased it before. We go into the season with a body of knowledge, with an understanding, and we come out of it with lessons learned. Every year, we tweak our setup, we tweak our approach. We understand the public lands or the private lands that we're pursuing better because of the last year. And I think a lot of times we do a lot of emphasis on big picture items. This is what you should be doing, and sometimes we forget that, you know, to update people. You know, this is what we found from this past year, and it might be one tiny little. You know, some of these episodes might be 15 minutes long, guys, because there may not be a whole lot to say. But I somehow doubt it because I talk more than anybody on the face of the planet. So, Chase, I'm curious, man, what were your lessons from this past fall?
Well, I'd say there were probably a couple of lessons from this past fall. I mean, I think you can always learn something from the previous season. I don't think anybody leaves a season saying they didn't learn anything from the fall. There were a couple of different things. One of the things that I need to be more diligent in is I talked a lot about this year is I had some equipment failures during the season and it cost me two deer. So one was my rest on my bow, which I think I know how it happened, but either way, and maybe just creating a check system while I'm in the tree, once I'm set up, just be like, all right, everything is on. And I know a lot of people do that. They have those white markers and things where they mark everything on their bows just to make sure when they're up in the tree, they're like, okay, I still have the confidence that everything's on right now. Because that cost me a deer. I ended up wounding a deer. I'm pretty sure he's fine. It was a high shoulder shot and it was disappointing. It was a really nice public land buck for Florida. But I learned that lesson. Like, hey, man, you got to be more diligent in checking your stuff. Don't get relaxed because that's when bad things can happen when you're in the woods, especially things that can be avoidable. Like that could have been avoidable had I checked it. So that was one of them. The muzzleloader thing, I still don't know what happened with that. But I'm probably not going to use loose powder anymore.
Yeah.
But I'll probably just go back to the pellets because I never had any problems with.
We need to have Tony back on the podcast and tell him about that story and see what he's got to say.
Yeah, he may have a quick fix for it.
Yeah.
But with it happening to me once, I'm pretty sure I don't know that he could change my mind.
Okay, fair enough.
Because it had never happened to me before.
Yeah.
So, and I never had any issues before and had shot plenty of deer with my muzzleloader before that. But he might be able to. You never know. I do like the cleanness factor of the loose powder.
Yeah.
It's just so much easier to get your projectile in the gun.
Yep.
It's a lot easier to clean, all of that comes with it, and less corrosive on the gun. I mean, there are a lot of advantages to it, but if you pull the trigger and the gun doesn't go off, then all those advantages go out the window at that point.
Yeah, it's now suddenly one big disadvantage.
Right. It's not a big disadvantage then. Another thing that I learned, I mean, I started hunting this piece of public this year. I had previously hunted it about a decade ago. So, and I think I'd hunted it for maybe a year or so, maybe about 10 years ago, got back in there and just learning basically the good times to be in there, because every area has good times where it's like you really need to be there. And then some is just kind of so-so, or maybe it's you're really just wasting your time being in an area. And this year I did a good job of kind of logging that information this was when bucks started to become significantly more daylight active. This is when I noticed kind of the seeking phase. This was pretty much the chasing phase. This was kind of the rut, and just getting that dialed into all of my properties, really, public and private, to where maybe I'm not wasting time in areas I shouldn't be in, because certain areas the rut kick in, it's full bore like early October, and then other areas full bore kind of mid October, and then I have an area that's more like Novemberish. So maybe making sure that I'm focusing my efforts where they need to be. Instead of just I'm just going to go hunt over here just because it's convenient. I've kind of fallen on that before, and I know that that's not necessarily productive and I need to be a little bit more productive in my hunting, especially when you get into times where maybe you're not able to hunt as much. This year, I wasn't able to hunt as much as I normally would be able to because of work, school, everything that's going on. So I need to find a way to be more productive in the woods to utilize my time better. And I think by doing that, I'll be able to set myself up in the future.
Yeah.
I could see that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, one of your equipment issues also came on public land.
Yeah. The bow thing came on public land for sure. But, and there's other little things, like say that you learn about your setup, or maybe I want to move to a different setup because I don't necessarily like my current setup. I mean, that's always going to be something that you're going to go through each season. I don't know that I've ever found just like, okay, like kind of like Tanner has, like, this is my setup and this is what I'm going with. I feel like there's, especially with all these new groups and Facebook groups and everything that you can be a part of now, where people are like, oh yeah, this is my setup. And I'm like, oh, that actually looks pretty good. I may want to try that. I would never try that, whatever. I think it's good to kind of tinker and kind of make things more efficient. Kind of go back to what I was talking about with the actually like tracking deer and stuff like that, is making things more efficient in the woods. And I think that if I can do that, then I'll be ahead of the game, and maybe I can focus on other things.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I think getting ahead is always like the difficult thing, right? It's this is delicate balance. I think trail cameras help you with that a lot. We've talked about that ad nauseum. I think that's kind of one of my components, right? Is trail camera usage this year changed a lot of things for me, because as everyone probably knows by now, going into this year, I'm going to be a first time dad. And so my time's going to get even more scarce. You've warned me, you've given me, ever since we've been friends, you've given me warnings about those first few years and reduced time in the woods. And everybody also knows I don't have a whole lot of time in the woods to begin with. I'm a weekend warrior, just like a lot of other people. And trail camera usage, I've talked about its merits for a while now, but one of the things I did this year that was kind of unconventional was after hunts in the dark, I would check trail cameras, and I found that trail cameras, we talked a lot about long-term soaks, they gave me the ability to verify areas I wanted to hunt. We've talked about putting them in long-term areas where maybe you're not certain. I did a lot of applying trail cameras to areas where I wanted to go back to hunt. And since I was already going to put my scent there, I wasn't also worried about checking that trail camera, which is not something I've done a lot of in the past. And what that does is, Parker McDonald, he had a frank conversation with me this past summer and said, dude, if you only hunt on Saturdays and sometimes on Sundays, you're never staying on top of the current deer movements. You need to set aside 3 to 4 day blocks where you can find the deer, get on top of them, and get after them. And so I started thinking, okay, I don't have a whole lot of time for those 3 to 4 week day blocks. I mean, that's just difficult. I mean, I got to take off work. Wife has got, you know, I can't have any commitments with the family. And so what I started to do was the hybrid of that. If we're going to say long-term soaks give me all kinds of intel while I'm not there, well, if I want to hunt an area and I want to know if it's a good spot, that morning I go in, I do the hunt like I normally would, check that camera midday, and if there was nothing hot coming through, I know I don't need to throw an afternoon hunt there. You know, if the deer movement wasn't what I wanted it to be, it was time to move. And so the mobility component of things really helped, but it really helped with breaking apart new pieces of public land, having those cameras out there, getting those data points, because sometimes an area looks like it might be good and it's not. And sometimes a very unsuspecting area produces better. And a lot of that happened for me in Georgia this year, where areas that I expected to find a lot of does, I ended up getting almost predominantly bucks on camera. I mean, You remember the ones I sent you where they're bedding in front of the camera in velvet prior to the season. And then, you know, all the way through the season, I had deer on camera there. That was a huge thing for me was, you know, not just dedicating cameras to areas that I may want to hunt in the future, but areas that I want to hunt now so that I can confirm if I'm wasting my time there. Because in Florida, my mindset is I got to throw 2 to 3 sits at that area before I know if there's deer moving through there because their range is so big. But in Georgia, it's not quite the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of get where you're coming from.
That was a huge thing. And being able to take that data, create historical trends, but also in September, we had Spartan Forge come on the podcast, and he had this predictive model, this AI predictive model that takes all of these known data points and, you know, compares weather, barometric pressure, the rut, all these different things that makes predictions about deer movement. And being able to have that that wide array of cameras that I was checking at night or checking at lunch to get that live information, I was able to compare it to Spartan Forge, which was really kind of cool, man, because you and I, we have our theories. We have our built-in BS theories. I call them all the time, where the sun is right above the horizon. They're moving at this time, and, you know, or not the sun, but the moon. If it's setting, then the deer are going to be moving between 10 and 2. You know, you hear these kind of things all the time, and it works for people. But it was really cool to check what I did to the Spartan Forge app, and both deer that I killed, bucks that I killed this year, the predictive models in Spartan Forge were on. The November buck, the predictive models were very minimal movement close to bed. We had a hurricane coming through, and it was cool to watch it as that hurricane projection started to change and the forecast for this area started to change. The model for the AI changed, and it went from a, like, going into that hunt, it was supposed to be really cool, and the rut's supposed to be picking up, and all these awesome factors were starting to really coincide, and then the hurricane comes sweeping up through the Gulf, and the predictive models changed, and it said limited movement close to the bedding area. And then on the first hunt, I had that buck come through right like 15 minutes before daylight. I could see it, you know, legal light. I could see the buck. He came in grunting, and then the woods were absolutely dead in an area that historically was wildly, wildly popular. A lot of deer movement, a lot of daylight activity. And the next day, when I'm sitting in the tree stand, I was able to, on my way to the stand, say to myself, okay, I need to take advantage of the first 45 minutes of daylight because the predictive models are saying they're not going to be moving much. We didn't see anything yesterday, but the deer was here, so you know he's using this area. And I blind called to the general area I thought he was bedding in right as the sun came up. And, you know, obviously everybody knows the outcome to that. Killed said deer. So it was really cool being able to take that trail camera information that was live or the in-person interactions and compare it to that model.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of talked about this before, how when I killed my buck, I went back and looked at the Spartan Forge data for that specific day. And I kind of had some of the same similar results where I think it was predicting kind of like transition area that day between bedding and food. And that's where I ended up killing my buck, was in an area just like that. So that was kind of neat to see. Kind of looking forward to digging more into that app and being able to compare trail cam data and on the stand data to how it's working.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And we've spoke a lot to Bill, and I know he's got a lot of cool things coming down the pipe. I'm kind of hoping he'll open up the predictive models for past days, which is something that he and I talked about. And I know he's considering, but it'd be cool to take some of those data points that we have, dude, and compare. Like, holy crap, in this area, I've got a deer coming through the first week of December every year, and then looking at the predictive model and seeing if maybe in September when you're not there, is it also making the same prediction for that deer? In which case, does that give you that leg up? It's going to be really cool. That's a really neat feature. If you guys haven't heard that episode, go back to in September, listen to it. It's a really fun one. He's a great guy. I think this is the only deer predictive software out there that's built on such a vast array of southern data points. And I think it's really tailored. Actually, you know what? Let's get him back on the show soon. What do you think about that? Do a follow-up.
Yeah, great.
We'll do that. So, Bill, if you're listening, you just got scheduled. You don't even know. but lesson number two, for me is be open to styles of hunting. This year, I did an extraordinarily large amount of ground hunting. I am not getting rid of the saddle. Before I catch any comments for that, that is still my go-to way of hanging from a tree and killing things. But I bet you I went from 0% hunting from the ground to probably a 60-40 mix. And the reason for that is when you're tackling new pieces of public, it was especially when there's low pressure, it was really nice to simply be sitting in an area and be like, this area doesn't match what I thought it was, or this area feels dead, the birds aren't talking, the wind isn't coming the right direction, any of those number of things, and say, okay, I'm going to go over that ridge and see what's over there, and slowly creep your way over there, set up again, be mobile, cut down on that weight. I killed my second buck this year doing exactly that, where I'd been hunting this area, I'd been bouncing all the way around, all over the place, I found fresh sign, and I leaned up against a tree. You know, like, it was like the epitome of run-and-gun mobile hunting, and it really paid off. And I think, looking back, there's a lot of overlooked spots. Maybe there are planted pine rows in your areas that are too big or too small for tree stands, but maybe a blind would look absurd inside there. Or maybe it's a swamp bottom that you could move through that swamp bottom, set up doing calling during the rut, and you can see 50 to 60 yards, and there may very well be better cover on the ground than up on trees that are all competing for light and don't have branches. Hunting from the ground, I'd be willing to bet you, Chase, I mean, this year I'm going to start practicing my bow from my turkey stool. Obviously not going to be taking long shots for in that kind of setup, but honestly, dude, I could see myself going to a genuine 50-50 setup where I creep into an area in the afternoon, find fresh sign, and just post up on the ground, honestly.
Yeah. I've had a lot of luck in the past just going into a new area, not really finding anywhere that I could set up in a saddle or climber or whatever I was using at the time, and just sitting on the ground, and have had a ton of encounters with deer just by the signs telling me to sit here. I'm going to sit here, whether I can sit on the ground or up in a tree. And I think that if you quit putting limits on yourself with hunting, then you're going to have more success. Maybe not just believing, okay, I've got to be in a tree, or I'm not going to have an encounter with a deer. There's so many people out there that have success on the ground or even other means that you should never just limit yourself to one style of hunting.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that, I think I've talked about that a lot throughout the course of this year, is being open, have your open mind, not just to where to hunt, but how to hunt it, right? I mean, it's especially with the rifle. If you've got the ability to reach out and touch something, I did a lot of rifle hunting this year. Hunting from the ground sometimes makes more sense in that regard too, because I mean, there were several times I just posted up and did observation hunts, but an observation hunt with a rifle is a lot different than an observation hunt with a bow, because that gun is deadly out to 200, and my self-imposed range with my bow is 30 yards. So I can do a observation hunt and not actually feel like it's, you know, quote unquote, throwing away a hunt. A buck walks out at 150 yards. He better not sit still broadside, you know? I mean,
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, how many times do you hear the story about somebody going to a spot hunting in a tree and then getting down, and then on their way back walking, they end up having an encounter with a deer and killing it from the ground? I mean, it's a proven way. It's a proven tactic to get things done.
It is, for sure. And a lot of times you can take the bow or the rifle with you while you're checking trail cameras, you know? Like, don't leave it home. Creep through the woods like you're still hunting, because you might bust something. And if you got the wind in your face, a lot of times the deer will just stand up and look. You know, right. They don't just tear out of there. So, but yeah, man, it was a season full of learning for me. I learned a lot of new public lands, learned some new strategies, some appreciation from hunting from the ground, which also has the added benefit of a hell of a rush. You kill something at 40 yards from the ground, that is a heck of a heart pounder.
But, oh yeah. especially if you're doing it with a bow at like 10 yards.
yeah, exactly. Dude, a ghillie top is in my future. When I got to thinking about a lot of areas around here, there are some really awesome trails that I think in some funnels and some areas where there's white oaks, and it's only a 30-yard circle. You know, it's a tiny little space, and I can get in there quieter, making less noise, if I can find a palmetto to tuck up into and just, you know, put on a ghillie suit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look at the Hunt in Public. I mean, yeah. they're having loads of success from the ground with a bow. So,
well, yeah. And honestly, I should give them credit because they were the one that inspired this back when they did their public land tour in Pennsylvania and they did all that. Oh my goodness, Zach, thank you. Started, you know, honing in on that area every day, getting in tighter and tighter and tighter. I was like, oh my God, dude, I'm totally like, and it was thick where he was hunting. It was very Florida-ish, you know, South Georgia-ish thick. And he was getting in there and getting it done and having these encounters. I'm like, man, I'm being a fool right now. So credit to Zach Fahrenbaugh, dude. I appreciate you, taking the time. And I can't remember who was doing the camera work, but that also must've been incredible. That was cool, but. Yeah, dude, we learned a lot this year. It was a good year. I'm going to go ahead and call 2020 my best year. 2 turkeys, 3 deer, 2 bucks, 2 different states, all on public land. Yeah, man.
Yeah. You had a great season, a real good season. I also learned to not go to the Midwest when it's like 75 degrees out for a straight week.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man. Well, you know, you say that, but you had a lot of good encounters even then, and it wasn't any better here.
Yeah. If I have the opportunity, I wouldn't go at that time. I would wait.
Sure. Yeah.
They're still going to be on the move. Uh-huh. Just may not be as much as it normally would be. But also, one of the last things that I can kind of go is don't give up on an area. If the trail camera data and all that's telling you, hey, there's a buck in a certain area, is to not give up on it. I mean, I had a buck, or in the buck that I killed this year. I mean, I could have easily have kind of like written that area off because I'd hunted it 5-6 times with no encounters with that buck. And if I had done that, then I probably wouldn't have ended up killing him. But I knew that I'm like, this is the area. This is probably the best area that I've got to where I know he moves through this area. And we've kind of talked about this before, is where it kind of seems like they kind of run some patterns. Like you'll have them in an area and then they'll disappear for 5-6 days. And then they may come back through that area. So if you're going in there and they're on that pattern, well, if they hadn't been in there for 4 or 5 days, you're not really messing anything up in that area. So just be persistent. And like it happened for me, it paid off for me when I killed my buck. And then the other buck that I was after, I mean, I had the encounter, he's just on the other side of the fence. And it was kind of the same thing. I was like, I know this is his area. So I had to just keep going to that area. And I had my encounter with the deer. So I can't complain about that. It was just, there was a fence line between me and him, 10 yards of space. But, and that's the way hunting goes sometimes.
It does. Yeah.
To just don't give up on an area.
No. Yeah, you can't live and die by trail cameras, right? Like I'm harping on their abilities to, you know, help you, but you know, I get a bunch of photos of a deer and then he disappears for a minute, you know, I'm not scrapping it.
Yeah. I mean, I had a buck this year. Perfect example. I mean, he would show up for like a day or two. And then he would go missing for 8 or 9 days. And I mean, It like kept happening over and over and over again.
Right.
So I was just like, well, eventually, maybe one of these days I'm here will be one of the days that he decides to pass through this area. So I thought it was kind of cool just tracking it and just be going, okay, all right, he was here like these 2 days and then gone. And then next thing you know, I'm catching him on camera again, like a week later. I'm like, all right, he'd show up for that day or so and then gone. And I'm like, geez, man. I was like, it's almost like I almost have to hunt here every single day.
Right.
To get that shot. Because there was a couple times where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go work overtime today. And go work overtime. Bam. There he is on the camera. And there he is like 2 days in a row on the camera in broad daylight, like 8 o'clock, 8:30
in the morning. Opening day, right?
No, this was a different deer.
Oh, different deer. Okay, got you.
But it was funny how you can kind of, you start tracking things and noticing trends of deer, but, and you're like, well, I've been in here a bunch, but it, he still shows up. It's just like, whatever, for whatever reason, he's moving around. Like he has like this circuit that he likes to run to where he's here for a couple of days. And I never could like really get him pegged down somewhere else though. And I think it was, I think he was hanging out off property, quite a bit too. So I think that it's like, well, he must be hanging off property, and maybe I'll get my chance at some point. I mean, I had an encounter with him. It was just, didn't work out.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's part of it. They're going to win more often than we do.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So. They're trying to survive.
That's right. That's right. Well, dude, let's send them on their way. And I think the next one they hear is either going to be Adam Miller or Greg Litzinger, both of which we're going to pick their brain about what they've learned in the past deer season. And I think it should be a good time. This is going to be a fun series. We're going to keep it kind of short, maybe, you know, 5-6 of these, and just kind of pick people's brains. Strategy is one thing. Learning and adapting that strategy to tailor for you is ultimately what's going to lead to success, because if you're listening in Florida, exactly what you hear in Michigan may not pay out for you. I'd be willing to bet you it doesn't. So,
yeah, that's true. And then after that, we're going to start diving into a little bit of turkey stuff.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, for sure. So, guys, if you enjoy this episode, do us a favor. Give us a like, subscribe, tell somebody about the podcast. That's how we grow. And don't forget to enter for that Patreon giveaway. It's going to be... Well, let's see. We're probably sitting at about $250 worth of stuff we're giving away, including a custom Chasing Tails pot call, Alps Grand Slam turkey vest and bottomland, and some mouth calls, it sounds like. So until next time, no matter what you do, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.